Welcome to the Beacon broadcast from Beacon Baptist Church in Burlington, North Carolina, featuring expositional Bible teaching by Pastor Greg Barkman. If you'd like to correspond with the Beacon broadcast, or if you wish to support this radio ministry, write to the Beacon broadcast, Post Office Box 159, Alamance, North Carolina, 27201, or find us on the web at beaconbaptist.com. BeaconBaptist.com. The Beacon broadcast is supported in part by the gifts of faithful listeners. Now, with today's message from God's Word, here is Greg Barkman.
Amazing grace. Last Lord's Day, we moved away from our study in the Gospel of John and focused upon a text in the book of Isaiah. Specifically chapter 9 and verse 2, which is a Christmas prophecy. It is telling us about the coming of Jesus, which of course is on the minds of many people at this time of year. And we got started into that text last week, but I think we need another broadcast, namely today, to finish it up. And so we plan to do that on this last Sunday of December, 2018, and then, Lord willing, as we move on into the new year, we'll return to our study in the Gospel of John. Here's what the text says in Isaiah 9:2. The people who walked in darkness have seen a great light. Those who dwell in the land of the shadow of death, upon them a light has shined. We'll continue where we left off last week with a little bit of review, but first let me welcome you to the last Beacon broadcast, the last Sunday Beacon broadcast of the year. On this December 30th, 2018, thank you for joining us, and thank you for remembering that we depend upon the gifts of radio listeners to continue this ministry. And it would be wonderful if some of you would consider perhaps a special year-end gift to carry forward the Beacon broadcast into the new year. Well, this text in the book of Isaiah, talking about people who walked in darkness, people who dwelt in the land of the shadow of death. They are people, if you back up into verse 1, who are related to the tribe of Zebulun and their territory between Asher and Naphtali in central Galilee. The people of Zebulun, the people of Naphtali, the people who were by the way of the sea, and that they're in the territory between, on the northern part of the land of Israel, or the land of Canaan, between the Mediterranean Sea to the west and the Sea of Galilee to the east. They're along a major international highway, and therefore are in a good position for international trade. But they are, as we saw last week, greatly vulnerable to Gentile invasion and intermingling. And that's a lot of what took place with the people in this territory. They were not as true to God as other people in the nation of Israel who were themselves pretty spotty in their record of faithfulness to God, as you know. You can't really look at any portion of the nation of Israel and say, there are some people who remained true to Jehovah, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, through all the generations of their existence. And thankfully, we can point to those and say, there are the people who were faithful. But that really isn't true. Everybody, not every individual, but every tribe, every portion of the nation, people in the south, people in the north, people in the east, people in the west, people that occupied territory in all 12 of the tribes of Israel, were unfaithful to God and to His gracious provision and protection and blessing that He poured out upon them over the years. But these particular people that we're talking about in this text were some of the first to show signs of decline and some of the ones that were farthest from God and most in spiritual darkness. Back up to verse 1 of Isaiah chapter 9. Nevertheless, the gloom will not be upon her who was distressed, as when at first he lightly esteemed the land of Zebulun and the land of Naphtali, and afterward more heavily oppressed her by the way of the sea beyond the Jordan in Galilee of the Gentiles. And then this wonderful promise, this wonderful prophecy, this wonderful encouragement in verse 2, the people who walked in darkness, that's a description of these people, the people who walked in darkness have seen a great light. Those who dwelt in the land of the shadow of death, upon them a light has shined. Now what is this light that shined upon them? Well, it is none other than the coming of Jesus the Christ, the Messiah. And how do we know that? Because the New Testament certifies it. Now I turn and read from Matthew chapter 4. Now when Jesus heard that John had been put in prison, he departed to Galilee. And leaving Nazareth, he came and dwelt in Capernaum, which is by the sea, in the regions of Zebulun and Naphtali, that it might be fulfilled which was spoken by Isaiah the prophet, saying, the land of Zebulun and the land of Naphtali, by the way of the sea, beyond the Jordan, Galilee of the Gentiles, the people who sat in darkness have seen a great light, and upon those who sat in the region and shadow of death, light has dawned. And then it goes on to say, from that time Jesus began to preach and to say, repent, for the kingdom of heaven is at hand. And so there, even though there are clues in the text itself, in Isaiah, that this indeed is a messianic prophecy, we don't even have to limit ourselves to the clues and to wonder if we are understanding them correctly, which is always the challenge when you're dealing with prophecy. But we have this very clear statement from the book of Matthew in the New Testament, telling us that the coming of Christ is indeed the fulfillment of this prophecy of Isaiah. Christmas was the dawning of the great light. And so what it's telling us is that the portion of Israel that was the darkest was in the coming of Christ to give way to the greatest light. And how is that so? Because Christ grew up in Galilee, Nazareth, the territory of Zebulun. He began his public ministry in Galilee, in the synagogue, and ministered in the areas of Zebulun and Naphtali. Capernaum became his headquarters, Naphtali, by the way of the Sea of Galilee. He launched several missions into Gentile territory beyond Naphtali and Zebulun, on into Tyre and Sidon and so forth. He did that in reaching out to Decapolis on the other side of the Sea of Galilee. He did that in the Mount of Transfiguration, which most Bible scholars believe took place in a Gentile area beyond the borders of Israel. He did that when he visited Sidon and talked to the woman there and ministered to others as well. And though Christ ministered in all of Israel, the whole territory that we know as the nation of Israel in the first century, his first ministry was in Galilee, the territory of Zebulun and Naphtali. I think we could make a case for saying that his greatest ministry was in Galilee, the territory of Zebulun and Naphtali. And these people were blessed with the greatest light from Christ's earthly ministry. Christ went where the conditions were the darkest. And there's a reason for that. Christ went where the Gentiles were most numerous, and there's a great reason for that. And we're going to talk a little bit more about how to understand what Christ did, but please first understand what the prophecy says, what it refers to. These northern two obscure tribes, very obscure tribes of the nation of Israel, who were in the greatest spiritual darkness, who were intermingled with the greatest number of Gentiles, and yet Christ in coming clearly concentrated his presence, his ministry, his teaching, his life-giving truth, his light-empowering truth, he concentrated all of that upon them. What do we learn from all of this? Well, number one, we should learn something about God's mercy. His compassionate mercy. His tender-hearted pity. No matter how dark the darkness people live in and have gravitated to and have embraced, for men love darkness rather than light because their deeds are evil, no matter how low they have come in their sin and rebellion against God, no matter how defeated they have become in not carrying out their intentions and promises, particularly those that relate to serving God and being faithful to their scripture and to their spiritual heritage, yet there is hope for those who are in the darkest places, who are in the most unlikely places, who are the farthest from God, because that's exactly the people that Christ came to. We can see it in a very obvious sense in this fulfillment of prophecy from Isaiah chapter 9 and how it was fulfilled in the coming of Christ and what he did to fulfill it. And that becomes a portrait. It becomes a picture of the way God operates, of the mercy that he shows. We realize from Christ's earthly ministry that he was the friend of sinners, that he came not to call the righteous but sinners to repentance, that he deliberately and frequently went into the homes of those who were considered to be notorious for their sinfulness, scandalizing the most religious among them, scandalizing those who were the most meticulous for the law and the most zealous in their outward righteousness and conformity to the laws of Moses and to the teachings of the spiritual fathers, the rabbis. And they looked where Jesus went and they said, it's obvious that this man is not from God because he eats with sinners. He delights to interact with sinners, to intermingle with sinners. He delights to go into their homes. He delights to talk to them. Why, this man could not be from God. Wrong. You've got it exactly backwards. That's one of the greatest evidences that he is from God. Because he's showing the kind of mercy that God himself shows, the kind of love that God shows. For God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son. Christ came into the world to save sinners, said the Apostle Paul, of whom I am chief. He comes to the lowest of the low. He comes to the darkest of the dark. That's where the light of salvation shines. And that should give great encouragement to all of you who have loved ones. Some of you have children, grown children perhaps, who are far from God, walking in darkness, have turned from the light that has come to them, have deliberately walked away from that light and truth and have walked in the paths of darkness rather than the paths of righteousness. And you look at that and you say, I wonder if they have placed themselves beyond the mercy of God. You know they haven't placed themselves beyond the reach of God because you know God is able. But I wonder if they've placed themselves beyond the mercy of God. I wonder if they have so spurned the love of God that they are no longer recipients for the merciful love of God to be shed abroad to them. I wonder if they have walked away from the grace of God to such an extent that there's no hope for them. And I would say to you, remember, 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 the people who sat in darkness have seen the greatest light. And upon those who sat in the regions of the shadow of death, light has dawned. Remember this illustration of the heart of God, the mercy of God, sovereign mercy. He doesn't bestow his mercy upon those who deserve it. We know that to be true, but somehow we still think our calculations, the way we evaluate situations, we still have that in mind. Those who have forfeited the mercy of God will not receive mercy. Those who have deserved it, who have earned it, there's a chance that they might receive it. Well, dear friend, please remember that God's mercy is sovereign mercy, which means that he bestows it where he chooses, and it's obvious he doesn't choose to bestow it upon the people who appear to us to be the most deserving. And all you have to do is think about yourself to know that's true. You spurned God's ways at one time in your life. You despised his Son. You turned away from the truth of his word. And yet God, in his mercy, pursued you and brought light into your soul and subdued you and brought you to bow before his throne. And his mercy is compassionate mercy. His mercy is sovereign mercy. His mercy is extensive mercy. It reaches, in this case, not only out to the Jews to whom the promise of the Messiah had been given, but beyond them to the Gentiles. There's a wideness in God's mercy as the wideness of the sea. And you see, all of this is foretold by Isaiah the prophet hundreds of years before Jesus came. But when he comes, he shows us exactly what Isaiah was talking about, and he fulfills so beautifully in his own life and ministry the very words that were suggested by Isaiah. We look at those words and we say, I hope that's what they mean. I hope there's hope for those who are in the greatest darkness. I hope there is hope for those who are beyond the covenant nation of Israel, but are actually Gentiles who have been shut out from that covenant and from those blessings and those promises. I hope all that is true. It would be wonderful if it were true. And Jesus comes and says, it's true. Here I am. And this is how I have fulfilled this prophecy found in Isaiah. Learn about God's mercy. Learn about salvation. Recognize the greatness of man's darkness. Yes, 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 they are people who sat in darkness and who sought darkness and who loved darkness rather than light. A deliberate darkness, a dangerous darkness, a dreadful darkness. The shadow of death it's described here as. That's a dreadful darkness, a dangerous darkness indeed. It's a destructive darkness. And yet, Christ came to those very people. Recognize the greatness of man's darkness. Recognize the greatness of Christ's light. That's the point here, that his light is greater than the darkness. Now, in a sense, we know that that's always true. You take the darkest place that you can find, that you can create. We don't have a lot of darkness. In our world today, there's so much what some people call light pollution. Always light, almost any place you go. You have to go way, 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 way far away from any town, from any community, from any habitation, to get miles away from any house, any home, any artificial light, to get any sense of the real darkness of night. But of course, most of the time, that's not total darkness. because there are the lights that God created. The sun, the moon, and the stars. And at night, not the sun, but you've got the moon and the stars. And even in those times when the moon isn't shining, you've got the stars. And the darker, the farther you get away from artificial light, man-made light, the brighter become the lights from the stars. And it's very difficult to actually get in the place of total darkness. I don't know if I've ever been in the place of total darkness. But this much I know. Say go into a closet and shut the door and seal up the crack so that no light can come in under the door. There'll probably still be a little bit that'll get in there but it'll look like there isn't any. That's darkness. Now, in that place of darkness, all you need is the smallest. You take one of those little teeny flashlights sometimes used as a keychain. You know what I'm talking about? It has to be really small to be used as a keychain. One of those teeny little flashlights that really doesn't shine much light at all. It's not much good if you're trying to walk out to the mailbox. It's not good to light your path. All it's basically good for is if you're in a dark place and you're trying to open your door and you don't have enough light, it'll shine enough light on the keyhole for you to find that and put your key in it, and that's about all it's good for. But you shine that little teeny bit of light in a place that is darker than normal, and it seems like a greater light than normal. It seems like a greater light than it seems like when you're using it for other purposes. You're astounded at how much light that little teeny light can give in a place of such darkness, but... And that's a wonderful truth, and I'll hold on to that truth and come back to it in a moment. But when we're talking about the light of the world, we're not talking about a little light. We're talking about the greatest light. The light of the world is Jesus. And he purposefully targeted the darkest place in all of Israel and beyond Israel into the darkness of the Gentiles who had been in utter darkness for how long? All of the time that Israel had been in the light that had been given to them by their prophets, which was basically the Old Testament scriptures, starting with the book of Genesis written by Moses and on through the various prophets that God gave to them with the truth and light that he gave to them. They had an awful lot of light, and therefore, when they did not walk in the light, they were responsible for greater sin because they had greater light that they had sinned against. But here are the Gentiles who had not received any of those advantages and had walked in a greater darkness than even Israel had walked in. Even Israel, when it turned away from the light of truth, still had some light within. And yet, the light of Christ came to shine in the darkest places and is able, therefore, to bring the necessary light to the darkest places. Christ's light was a timely light because it came in the place of greatest darkness, and the greater the darkness, the more needed the light, and therefore Christ came with the light that was needed. Christ's light is a pervasive light. It shined in darkness. It lit up the darkness. It wasn't a little keychain flashlight. It was brighter than the noonday sun. It is the ultimate light. Every other light is merely a dim reflection of the one true light. But the light of the world is Jesus. And Jesus came and brought such light. Now, I told you to hold on to a thought a few minutes ago, and here it is, back in that closet with the little keychain flashlight. It's amazing how much light that little keychain can bring if the conditions are the darkest. And don't you realize that's the way we are? We're not much light. Compared to Christ, we aren't much light at all. Whoa. We don't want to even compare ourselves to him. He is brighter than the noonday sun. We are maybe duller than this teeny little keychain flashlight. Nothing by comparison. We say, what good is my little light? Well, put it in a dark place, and it becomes a great light. It becomes a lot of light. No, not the light that is as great as Jesus' light, of course not. But it is an amazing amount of light when it is in a dark place. Now, we tend, when we're talking about shining the light of truth that God has given to each one of us, we tend to almost instinctively shrink away from the darkest places. We think, well, maybe my feeble testimony, maybe the truth that I understand and am able to communicate, maybe the light that I'm able to shine could do some good among some people who have some light. I can add a little bit more light to the light they already have. And there are, of course, people like that who've grown up in Christian homes but have walked away from it. They have been exposed to truth, but they have not embraced it. And sometimes we think, well, my little light might be able to help somebody like that. But the people out there in the world who have never been exposed to the truth, they don't really know anything about the Bible. They don't know anything about Jesus. They don't know anything about the God of the Bible. I can't even relate to people like that. The little light that I have, it's not going to do any good in that place. But don't you realize that maybe just the opposite is true? That because that is a greater darkness, then your little light becomes, by contrast, a brighter light in that situation. Your little flashlight, your little keychain flashlight, is virtually imperceptible in the daylight. But you take it into that dark, dark closet, and it becomes a pretty significant light. And I'm just saying that to encourage you. Please go ahead and shine the testimony of the truth that God has given you in the darkest of places. I know you do it with fear. I know you do it with trepidation. I know you do it with a great deal of discomfort, or at least most people do. Now, I couldn't say that's true about everybody. I know that those things are true of most of God's people, but trust God. Rely upon Him. You do what God has told you to do and leave the results with Him, and just see what God may do with your light in that very situation. But back to our text, and now I'm reading it as it is stated in fulfillment in Matthew's prophecy. Matthew chapter 4, the land of Zebulun and the land of Naphtali by the way of the sea beyond the Jordan, Galilee of the Gentiles, the people who sat in darkness have seen a great light, and upon those who sat in the region and shadow of death, light has dawned. That is wonderful news. Joy to the world, the Lord is come. Let earth receive her king, let every heart prepare him room, and heaven and nature sing. To us a child of hope is born, and the light has come, glorious light. It is no accident that one of the joys of the Christmas celebration is the multiplication of lights. Lights, lights, lights. Lights on the Christmas tree, lights around the home, lights downtown, lights everywhere, lights along the pathway, extra light. What is the reason for that? Whether people understand it or not, it's a testimony to this text, to this truth, that Jesus Christ came as light into darkness, and He lights up that darkness. What a wonderful truth. Until next week and the new year, Greg Barkman saying good day. May God give you His eternal peace.